Do you each want to tell me, like, how you got into musical improv? I would love to know, starting with you, Greg.
Sure. I've been a pianist and a musical person my entire life. My parents are both music teachers at, like, public schools and choir directors and all that kind of stuff. My grandpa was a trumpet player in the symphony, et cetera, et cetera. Music was always going to be in my blood, but I always sort of secretly more loved comedy, I think, even as a kid taking piano lessons. And in college, I sort of fell in love with sketch and improv as a discipline the most wholeheartedly. And then when I moved out to LA, I think the first musical improv group I saw was Opening Night. And I was kind of like, oh, shit, it's everything put together. And I started playing piano for teams around the city because that was sort of something I already knew how to do as just a piano player. And I did that a lot. And as a result, I sort of audited every teacher in every class in Los Angeles, pretty much. And then, but I was still considering myself primarily just an improviser who happened to play piano. And then I was lucky enough to get cast on the first UCB musical mess hall team, The Pickup, where I actually kind of like performed it for the first time. And from that point on, I just fell head over heels in love.
Amazing. What about you?
My story is shorter thus far, but improv started super, super briefly in high school. For like one semester, 1 year, we had a comedy sports team, which is like a, I think, mostly Southern Californian thing at high schools where you do like short form games against other high schools. We didn't compete against other high schools. So I would just show up at lunch and we would do rhyming games. And I was like, I love the rhyming ones. The other ones, eh. But then it got disbanded. So I was like, okay, I'll maybe.
Disbanded?
Disbanded. The theater teacher was like, if you guys aren't committing to this, then I'm not paying dues, because dues was a thing to be in the official league. But then I think it was kind of that feedback loop where it's like, well, if you're not going to pay our dues, we're not going to devote as much to this, and then a whole cycle. But all that meant was I was like, okay, when I go off to college, I know that improv is something that people do, so I'll pick it back up there. And that's where I met Madison, on the same improv team in college. But musical was
that.
Only
didn't
yeah.
No,
isn't it cute?
It's very cute,
isn't it?
It's cute.
Come on, say it.
It's
Della,
cute.
That's really cute.
I'll add the cuteness. The first show I saw at, we went to UCLA, and
what was
the
that?
First what was that you have to giggle. UCLA. Every Bruin knows you have to giggle after you say UCLA.
Yeah,
but I saw the team that I would later be on perform, and Madison was like the lead of this long form narrative. And it was just electric, and I was like, that's the team. That's Aww. The freaking team. But it was all just regular improv up until like 2 years ago, starting to do UCB musical. And then it felt like, oh my gosh, this is so much more, not more fun, but it's like it can add this delicious cherry on top. Like you can have all the fun of improv, and then music just adds this another avenue to explore game and to support people. And puns are revered in musical improv and shamed in regular. So it's a great place to be if
so
your
true.
Mind still thinks
you're
in puns.
You're really good at puns.
You love
too.
A pun.
I love a little pun.
Me too.
What about you, Madison?
Yeah, I also did comedy sports in high school. Our team didn't get disbanded, though. Sorry. But yeah, I started doing improv in like sophomore year of high school with my high school league team. And then I did improv in college with Hannah for a year. We only had 1 year overlap. I'm older than Hannah. But I did comedy sports college league as well. But yeah, it was like all regular improv. But my sophomore year of college, we tried to do musical improv. And that same time that we were trying it, I got the internship for Baby Wants Candy at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Do you remember this?
Yeah, I forgot. I always forget that that's how we met.
That's how we met. Yeah. It's crazy. So, but I went once in 2017 and I went again in 2019 after I graduated college. So I, like around the time that we were trying on my college improv team, trying to do musical improv, I was like, well, let me apply for this internship. And then I went and then I watched Baby Wants Candy do it. And I was like, oh my God, like this is the closest thing that we have to magic in real life. And I was like, how do I do that? How do I get there? And that's why I started taking UCB classes so that I could take musical improv classes. And then, yeah, and I went back and interned a second time. And, yeah, it's been great. I'm trying
Baby,
to think.
Baby was the first, like, long-form improv I ever saw, too. So it always felt like, yeah, like, that was the final goal.
Exactly.
And improv along the way. And then it turns out improv is awesome, yeah. too. But musical is, yeah, it's like that magical moment.
It's exactly what you said, where it's like, it just heightens already good improv. It like takes it to a whole other place. So yeah,
tell me more about that. Like, what do you think about the form heightens what's already good? Like, what? Just say more about that.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's harder. I think it's harder because you're singing. but yeah, I don't know. I feel like you'll watch a Baby Wants Candy show, and there will be like a scene that's so strong and solid, and you could just keep watching that scene, and then suddenly the piano starts playing and it's like, oh, we're gonna get to hear a song about this. And in a song you can take a character's like thoughts and ideas and like the comedic premise of whatever and like just take it to a very fun like musical place. Mm-hmm. And that just like, yeah, I don't know, that makes it even more exciting to watch, I think. I don't know if you have thoughts on this as well. Like,
I feel like as adults, it like once it becomes musical, you let yourself play more and you let yourself be more whimsical. And so, like, even from the back line, like, normally in an improv scene, you're like, okay, I have, like, a walk-on. But instead, that can be, like, a back line chorus that is, like, fueling then the two people that are on stage in a way that then is, like, adding this, you know, musical component while also like kind of pointing the people in the scene to what is delightful and what is fun.
Yeah.
And I think you're like more willing to do that because you're like, this is musical, it's whimsy.
Yeah.
So I'm ready to go to that place, whereas like you might be trying to craft the perfect game move but be a little bit in your head or like deliver it but not commit it. Whereas musical, it like it wants big choices and strong emotions, so you're like willing to go there.
It's like there's no room to be jaded in any way or to be like just sort of like a blank slate on stage. You have to play like so much bigger and more committed. I mean, you should be committed in all improv, but yeah, I agree.
Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I tend to think even to kind of ground it back into the headier or more pragmatic space, as a tool, musical improv is incredibly helpful because it forces you to care enough about the comedy idea that you're playing that you have to sing about it, which yields, mm-hmm. I think, a more invested, present tense, kind of activated way to improvise. It's sort of like you have to find or discover or make a choice to get to a strong game because you have to sing about it. Mm-hmm. And then if you get rid of the have to sing about it and you play that style, that's just great improv, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've learned from Greg, too, like, and on a literal sense, the perspective of game being sometimes is two things. It's like, you're a doctor, but you have a dream of being a ballerina. So can I pull doctor specifics and ballerina specifics? That's already taught just for game in general frequently. But musically and lyrically, that is just, like, so fun to pull from. And then you're having so much fun with, okay, what's a rhyme that I can set up that the first line of the couplet is ballerina and the second line is doctor. So that's a very literal way in which I think it like sometimes can really heighten just like regular improv principles.
I also find that musical it sometimes moves you past that kind of like, because I agree with you, I sometimes call that Mad Libs improv, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, you have it's like it's almost the space where the jokes are gonna go, like the shape of it, mm-hmm. and that is like academically, scientifically good comedy writing. It's like setup, payoff, like normal world, mm-hmm. surprise on that world. And then I think sometimes what I feel like musical does, or hearing music and singing along to music does, is like elevate you to a deeper comedic play of mm-hmm. that idea that is. I mean, this is what I find myself thinking about now after doing a lot of musical improv, and you guys have as well, is like, how do I, at least in my head, I think about this before a show and then I go do all my hack things. But like, do you know what I'm talking about?
I do.
Yeah.
It reminds me, is it interesting podcast content to describe a meme? Is that interesting?
Sure. Yes. and then flash it.
And then flash it on the screen in the edit. One of my favorite meme types, I don't know if you've seen it, it's kind of like a line graph. and then there's like a curve that goes up and then goes back down. And on the down end on the far left, it's like a dumb looking guy. In the middle is like a stereotypically nerdy looking guy, where the curve is at the highest. Mm-hmm. And on the right, where it goes back down, is like an enlightened guy with like an aura. Mm. And if you were to make this meme about musical improv, I think the left side would say like, it's fun to sing funny. That's like the worst version. And then the thing goes all the way up to the stereotypical nerd guy. And it's like, use two things going on, one at a time, set up punchline in every lyric and you will... and then it goes all the way down and you get to the truly enlightened guy and he says, it's fun to sing dumb. So the starting and the ending points in the journey are exactly the same.
Yeah.
But you kind of have to get through the sort of overthought, overwrought intellectualization, academic codification or whatever,
yeah,
to get back to, now I know how to do sing dumb, mm-hmm, at a purer, more elevated level.
Exactly. Because it's like we're talking about game and we're talking about like make sure you solidify the game before you start the song. But it's also like what is the most fun, yeah, song to sing, you know? And we were talking to Ashley Ward. We're always talking to Ashley Ward. Ashley Ward said
kissing,
something.
Air kissing Ashley on camera?
we love you, Ashley. Ashley Ward said this thing about narrative musical improv, which was... don't worry about what the show like should be.
Yeah.
Think about what the show wants to be. And that like cracked my brain open because it's like there is certain like prescribed things that you maybe feel like you should do or this song should go here. But then it's like at a certain point, it's like, well, no, but like what would be fun right now?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
It was so fun to use the show we just did as an example. For this weird, mysterious,
yeah,
officiant to just be weird for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
I was
exactly
kind of like, I don't care about the plot right now. It's just fun to do this. Let's,
yeah,
just do this for a bit.
100%.
Yeah. It, and you can feel, there's like a sensation in my body sometimes when I have an idea of where the show is going and then it moves away and there's this option, it's happening sort of emotionally more than intellectually, of like, wait, like, my thing, like there
yeah,
can be a resistance,
of course.
And I think part of getting better at improv is like letting go of the feeling,
yeah,
and like going, ugh, like, oh, it's going this way. Like, I actually, it's gone. Like, mm-hmm, it is something bigger than me, and it's gone this way. So I have to just run with it. And if it ends up not having legs, then you can like let it be a short song or edit or what have you.
Yeah.
But like, you have to let it play out.
Yeah.
It's a boulder that's gaining momentum.
Exactly.
I feel like frequently the thing that I'm like, oh, I this is what's going to happen next is a super plotty thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so when something delightful does organically come up and you have to let go of that plotty thing, I feel like more often than not, it benefits you because then something happens in the organic thing that's a perfect setup to then bring in the plot. Or
yeah,
like,
yeah,
and then it's just way more satisfying than if you had come in and like steamrolled a new plot,
yeah,
move. It's like, okay, we got to have fun and it perfectly then was parallel to like something that's moving the story along instead of,
mm-hmm,
someone having like ham-fisted.
It's more surprising,
it,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's comedy, baby.
I also think with the show like the one we just did where there is like a plot as opposed to, there's a lot of musical improv that is more like montage-y, mm-hmm, where people come out, set up a scene, make a game, play that game all the way out, and it's over, and you never see those characters again. With a show like this, like from the first song, we knew we were probably going to see the wedding,
mm-hmm,
and my instinct as a player these days is like, don't hold the wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah, get there.
Get,
yeah,
there kind of fast, because the audience is like ahead of you. And so, you know, I loved that we went and did these two bachelor and bachelorette parties, but and then it was because I wasn't expecting it.
Mm.
I was like, oh, a bachelorette party, like it really,
yeah,
surprised me, and I was like, oh, that means the audience is surprised too.
Mm.
And then, yeah, but then my instinct, at least in terms of talking about switching all the way over to form for a second for narrative, it's like I feel like the best shows are the ones where, you know, I'm gonna go fight the demon, and then the next scene is fighting the demon.
Yeah,
and it's,
yeah,
like, oh yeah, we don't need necessarily like trials 3,
right,
like before we go fight the demon.
Yes.
We're just like, I already know what we're going to do. I'm going to fight that demon. So, yeah, I like that. I think it's good writing, like, on a higher scale of, like, whatever you think is going to happen, have it happen right away so that then you're ahead of the audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can deal with the aftermath, and then,
yeah,
that's the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's also simpler, and I think I'm really after simplicity and like cleanliness these days, and I feel like it can get convoluted, overcomplicated if you sort of force yourself to think of the three obstacles the protagonist mm-hmm. will face before mm-hmm. the final showdown or whatever. So yeah, just do it right now because we just said we were going to. And in that show, when after the opening number, it was the bachelorette party first. In my brain, I was immediately like, the next one has to be the bachelor party.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then all three of you.
Watching us go like this. We all went.
Yeah. It made me so tickled and so happy.
Yeah, that was a beautiful moment to see everyone yeah. already there.
Yep.
Because it yeah. feels right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. yeah. That was really nice.
Also really fun to have you playing and playing.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I feel like that also was just such a, like, guiding light, or like, okay, like Greg is knowing that it's time to sing, or we have something to sing about, which yeah. always when you're just playing piano is true, but I feel like there's another level of that when then you're also
we got the bouncer.
What a piece
not
of shit.
Bouncer.
That was a great game. I mean, let's talk about that. Like, sure. Let's kind of break that. Are we down to do 2020 hindsight?
Yeah
sure.
That kind of thing. I know sometimes getting in your head about after a show can be, but for the purposes of this and for anyone listening, I think it'd be cool to be able to go.
Yeah. Well,
just listen to one. Now let's.
Totally.
I think that's a really solid example of a gameplay really pushed by you that I thought was really great because there could be an instinct, I think, in an earlier improviser that yes and means be nice. Mm.
Yeah, I see that all the time, yeah. Or be polite.
Yes, and this character was extremely impolite. And in fact, the game is how many ways can we frame this guy as a bad choice
yeah.
for marriage, and how many ways can you play that he's a bad choice for marriage while earnestly, and then the almost like base reality is that he's quite earnest, is that he's like, he really wants love.
Yeah.
Because if he was just an ass, but he's also like, and I don't need you, then the song has no reason to exist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it has to be those two things in interplay, and that's the game, I think.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you labeled yourself so solidly that we were all like, all right, this is great. We get to just tell you what we need from a lover, and you get to say, it's not me, here's how. Yeah,
yeah,
that was really fun.
And that was us doing the quote-unquote, like, mad, the joke setup. Like, here's what I need, joke setup. Here's how I can't do it, mm-hmm. joke payoff. And I think you could probably do that for 10 minutes.
Yes.
Well, you're so specifically good at, like, Rolodex, whether it's through rapping or just pure, like, comedic idea after comedic idea. Because, like, the chip flavor one as well. I was like, how many can Greg just go for? And it's like, I have faith that if we do a song where Greg has to just, like, pitch things, he can just deliver zinger after zinger. Okay. And, like, when we're being like, okay, this is what we want, and you have to immediately, or you didn't have to, but for the music, you immediately responded of the exact opposite, which is just your mega fast brain.
Oh,
but I was like, okay.
Yay, Greg.
Idea
Yay,
machine.
Greg.
Thank you.
How does someone get better at that, Greg? Mm,
yeah. That's a good... Well, to me, the bouncer thing, that's like my favorite type of musical improv, where it almost functions like a regular improv scene, but we are singing it, where you say something and I respond to it immediately.
Mm-hmm. And really hard to get ahead of the joke.
Yes. And it makes me, and it makes all of us, have to, like, I can't think. I just have to say the next fun thing. Yeah. And I think the way maybe I would advocate getting better for that is, like, there's this exercise I did back in the day with a really good improviser named Josh Simpson, where he described ways to play comedy ideas as, like, the wood chipper. You take any sort of input and you put it through the wood chipper, that is your idea, and it comes out. And sometimes those ideas make a lot of sense to go into the comedy wood chipper, i.e. wood, which in this case, I don't know, is like, I need a lot of money. I can easily say, well, I can't, I'm very poor. Sometimes it is a little bit trickier, like maybe a full wooden chair, which can get in the wood chipper, but, like, takes some effort, and the effort is the point, and it's fun to watch the responder have that effort. And sometimes it fully does not belong in there, like an elephant or a bowling ball. And that can be the most fun, where you still have to fucking force it through there.
Right. And just want to underline two things there. One is the effort is the point.
The effort is the
point. Which, for a newer musical improviser, I would say is a really important thing to learn, because sometimes there is a fear of being perceived as effortful or a fear of doing it wrong. And I think sometimes people don't realize that the reason you would go to an improv show as opposed to a stand-up show or a written musical or a written piece of comedy or content is that it's the opportunity to watch the wood chipper working. It's the opportunity to watch them think, to watch them ideate. And I know there is a there are different philosophies on this, and I think all of them are valid. Some people believe you want to walk away from a show with people being like, that couldn't possibly be improvised. Mary Lou, who is another improviser we all know on the LA scene. Hi, Mary Lou. Once talked about there's like an art, and I'm not going to nail this, but she was an art history. She studied art history. And so she said there was like an art methodology where you can see the thumbprints on the piece. And so and it's called its madeness, like how much you can perceive it as made. And I think what's fun about improv is its madeness to me. It's the seeing the gears crunching.
Yeah.
So I wanted to underline that. It's good to be able – don't be afraid of being perceived as working or tripping.
Yeah, we want that.
Yeah. And then the other one, I may have lost it now, was right at the end, which is as the scene partner – it's okay to throw in an elephant.
Yes, like, absolutely.
There's a version, for example, had we done that song for 10 minutes, where we continued to throw you weirder and weirder things that we need. And it's almost like the game begins to morph and shift of like, oh, I want a partner who I want a partner who massages my butt. Like, only massages, but nowhere else.
Yeah.
And then you have to take that through the filter of, okay, so what's the opposite of that?
Yeah, I'm trained in the art of Swedish massage, and I've mastered all erogenous and relaxation zones except for the butt, something like that.
Yes, like exactly what doesn't work.
Mm-hmm. You can also, like, give that wood chipper, which I'm calling the person in the scene, exactly what they want, so to speak. Like, one of those examples could have been, I want a partner who won't listen to me and treats me like shit.
Yes, the opposite thing.
And then you have to like put the wood chipper in the wood chipper somehow. Oh, thank you for sharing that. Of course I'm gonna not listen to you and be the shittiest partner I can. And then it's like, wait, but how does that,
you're being nice. I don't want that. Right. It's the reversal.
It's very fun. It's
a great fun move.
So yeah, if you're looking to practice that, you know, think about, you can even like do the Mad Libs thing and pick two things and put one into the other in these different categories just in your own time and have a blast.
You used to have us do, like, instead of five things, the kind of classic improv warm-up. I think I don't remember the number that you would have us do instead.
I remember doing one where it's like, these are 19 things where I make people say way too many.
You run out of good ideas of, like, name five cereal brands that should exist. Five you can do and you can be really proud of yourself, but it's a lot of pre-writing and, like, or eat wood in the wood chipper. But I think doing 19 or whatever, by number 11, you're like, uh-oh, time to see what my brain does truly on the spot when it's truly improvising.
And they're
like
usually
that.
The funniest ones.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because the context is the mental exhaustion.
Yes.
And that's the fun of it. Like, if the 11th one was the first one you said, it might not be as funny.
Yeah. We'd be like, what the heck?
It's contextual, and that's the that's the fun.
We saw how you got there, kind of. Ended up there, yeah.
What's something you've been struggling with in musical improv lately? Or like that you're like, oh, I just learned this, or this is something I've been thinking about more in my improv?
Well, today's, I feel like, was a nice way to stray from just the classic narrative structure where there's like one protagonist. But when I am in that mode of like we have a protagonist and an antagonist, I feel like we've chatted about this where like maybe scene 5 through 7. I'm okay, how do I, what else do we want from this story that isn't either like resolving it too fast or making things too hard or just getting too plotty because I'm worried about exactly resolving or exactly setting the protagonist up.
So to be clear, just to someone who might not be as familiar with musical improv, you're talking about in a traditional what we're calling a traditional show, which means like you might have a protagonist, an antagonist, and then a series of scenes that pit these ideas or these worlds against each other, leading to a sort of like fairy tale style ending where all those things come together in a denouement. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But you're talking about the first four scenes feel pretty approachable because they're all kind of like laying the track mm-hmm. of the show. Like, meet our hero. That scene is understandable.
Yeah. What do they want usually?
Yeah, what do they want? Meet a villain. What do they want and how does it go against that? And then maybe you meet some charming side characters in that world and you're talking about, okay, now what does it look like in the writing mm-hmm. to smash them all together and make a good plot?
Yeah, which I think the answer, which, I mean, again, today's structure was a little different, but it is like letting yourself just think about what the character you played previously, like what they're up to, what would be the most fun thing rather than just like hitting these three obstacles or whatnot. But I think trusting that is probably just a matter of reps and trust in like different structures of a narrative still having the plane land at the end so that you know you don't have to do that exact mm-hmm. structure every time.
Yeah.
I think remembering that characters can have games that are bigger than their scene is helpful. Yeah.
I love that so much. I love that idea.
That's,
because, for example, we had our three characters in our scene we just did where they all shared a game of, like, getting a rich husband and or sneaking of the main thrust, the wedding heist.
Yeah.
These are the wedding heisters. So we, their want, or to a certain extent, their game could have been further explored with an if this then what philosophy that I didn't think of while we were in the show, but now with 2020 I can be like, oh, so these are people who want to like steal attention. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's a version of of a scene where like how else can they steal attention or what else are they stealing or any number of like what if that can expand plot. But it's like those are the kind of big brain moves I'm not always doing, but I think can lead to great shows.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, what else? If this is this kind of person, what are they getting up to?
Yeah. 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 I feel like that's something that I've been wanting to work on more. And like doing this show today, to use you guys as examples, like the bouncer character and then the just the weird officiant who was a captain.
Not a good game, by the way. Like so fuzzy. Like if we 2020 it, like I found myself really struggling out in part because I set myself up with a game that I think is a trap, which is like generally weird.
I'll be honest, I felt the same way about my Chip song where I was just like, I'm singing it's just gross things, that's it?
Right.
It felt fuzzy to me too.
Yeah.
And that swag though.
The swag. That was kind of the game. And we were like throwing a lot at you. We were kind
of That's normal. I mean, this is not to like look for I think it's all good improv, but I think what we're talking about is like if you want to push it further and be the best improviser you can be, which you know, we all do.
Not me, I'm good.
I'm
good to coast.
You're always saying that. Mm-hmm. Then at the top of that bouncer scene, I would have picked a specific way to be weird. I'm coming off boating. I said I was a captain, and sort of boating is the way that I relate to.
You're
most
the boating
things.
Officiant.
Yeah. Yeah. And so then the one-to-one is clearer. It's like, it's not just generally he's weird, he does poems, all these things. It's like, no, if he does a poem, it's going to be a boating poem.
Right.
And instead of carrying traditional stuff, he's got a harpoon.
Yeah.
And, you know, boating stuff. Like, it helps narrow in choices. Because when you don't narrow in, my headspace was like, this is actually harder because there's too many choices.
Yeah. I think I also, like, I don't know how you felt. I've never done musical improv sitting down like this. And so it felt like, oh, it's really clear to me when we know what this person's character game is and when we don't know what this person's character game is. Because it's like, all that I'm doing is listening to everything that's happening. I'm not like, you know, doing a crazy physicality or anything. Or like, you know, we're painting on like, we're wearing ski masks or whatever. And so like, I was very aware of like in like the song that I sang as like the groom. I was like, this isn't really anything, but it was still fun. We still had fun. But I was like, oh, a label could have been so much clearer here of like, this is how I see the world, like that POV and justification. So that's
totally. And it's a gift you can give yourself if you're stuck.
Yeah.
But it's also a gift you can give a scene partner if they're stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are some of the some of our strongest scenes in that set were scenes where somebody said something near the beginning of like, "Are you trying to?"
Yeah.
Da 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 da.
Always,
yeah.
Always.
Yeah, or like it feels like you're. It's sort of that soft pitch where the person can either say, "Well, that I could see how you'd think that, but actually it's this," you know, and you have options, or you go, "Oh, thank God, because I didn't even know what I was doing."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I love saying thank God to that offering myself. Mm-hmm. I just love doing as little work as possible in an improv scene, frankly. So if somebody tells me what I am, I will say, okay, great, thank you.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
With it's great labels from you, like to Greg, of like, you're such a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a classic labeler, just call someone a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's how she always
labels
people.
They know exactly what game.
In real life, too.
Yeah, in real life, she says it.
One thing I'm struggling with, to go back to your question, more on a macro level, though I think I saw it peek out in this set. Throughout the beginnings of my improv sort of education, and mostly at the UCB, every single note I would always get routinely from every single teacher was like, "You're a very good, grounded, cerebral, smart voice of reason. We want to see you like surprise yourself more and be sillier and be weirder." So that's what I've just constantly been trying to like hard turn the steering wheel toward. And I've done that for a while actively, and now I've been feeling lately a little over-cranked in that direction, where I feel a little at times like I'm being too chaotic or too silly. Like with that boat officiant, some of my moves were just like literal denials of what you were saying, because I was just like being a silly little gremlin. Mm. And I'm kind of interested in like, okay, now I got to find the middle. Now I got to go back to being a switch hitter of like, sometimes it needs the grounding intellectual voice of reason, and sometimes it needs to be a gremlin. It's not a one size fits all. I want to like get back to the center a little bit.
Yeah, I totally know what you mean, because when we start getting excited in a set, there can sometimes be a tendency to just make a game move because it was a pattern.
Yeah.
Mm. Of like, or not a game move. It's not even a game move, because
it's just a pattern.
It's just a pattern. And I think for early improvisers, it can be hard, or for experienced improvisers, it can be hard to quell that impulse of like, well, someone, you know, the way you see it a lot, like someone knocks over a chair on accident on stage.
So someone else. Yeah.
And so someone else knocks over a chair. And that was like, and that's like fun. It's the first time you've ever seen it in a set. But as someone who's watched a lot of improv, the instinct becomes like, well, but there was a scene going on.
Yeah.
And like we were getting to something meaty and something fun. And so just patternized behavior with no grounded reason. It might work in like a group game in a Herald, but like short of that, and especially in a narrative show, I feel like it actually is like a move for the show that knocks it off kilter.
Yeah. It's like, I feel like you use the term like chasing the shiny object.
Yes,
I feel
I've
like
heard
it's
that,
yeah, because you also you coached small town like, mayor like
yes
other,
oh yeah like coach Jadim, other, yes.
And I remember you saying that, and it's like I've heard that before, but it is like, oh, once you're aware of that, you really notice when it happens. And then it's like, also I think if a scene doesn't have the right base reality, and that's another thing that I'm trying to work on as an improviser, is just like establishing that as quickly as possible, so that if there is a shiny object, like even if we chase it for a second, we can return, you know. But it's hard when there isn't any of that, and then chairs are just getting knocked over. As fun as it is to knock over chairs,
it is fun
with an audience, though. Like, there's been a couple moments in shows recently where I'm like, I wish I had gone after the shiny object.
Yeah.
Rare, but like it feels like this thing where it's like I found a game and I know how to play it with my scene partner, and we're going to sing. And like right as the song is about to begin, we get a walk-on that's just like the audience erupts. It's delightful. It feels like you can't ignore it. And obviously you shouldn't, but then it's like, okay, well, back to my game that I carefully crafted. And there's been some moments where I went, oh, I wish I had at least acknowledged and played with the shiny thing a little bit alongside my game or whatever, rather than being like that didn't happen. That's distracting from what we had established. And I think in a perfect world, you're like, this shiny thing, here's how it goes into the wood chipper.
Right.
But there's been a couple moments where I'm like, oh, I was too loyal and steadfast blind to the shiny thing.
Yeah.
That's probably what at least takes me back to the idea of, like, it can't be a one-size-fits-all yeah. approach, which I always am trying to learn, not just in improv, but in life. I'm a person who loves, like, hacks and formulas and structures and things like that. And the more you kind of get through it, the more you realize the formulas help until they don't, and then you immediately have to throw them away. Mm-hmm. It's not helpful to chase a shiny object until it absolutely is, and then mm-hmm. you have to chase it with all your might. It's just like, you got to learn everything so it's on the tool belt, and then you got to throw the tool belt away if mm-hmm. you need to. Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah,
I agree. Oh, totally. And I think a lot of it has to do, I'm a strong advocate, and this is, I don't know if this is a popular opinion or one I see played out on a lot of stages, at least on the LA improv, musical improv I'm seeing, but that, like, not every song needs to be so long.
No, it mm-hmm. doesn't.
And I think, you know, sometimes part of what I think is going on when there's this experience of, like, why isn't, this was working when I started, and sometimes I think it's like, it's just done. Like, yeah. like the juice is squeezed from, especially if it's like a shiny object song. Yeah. Like, if someone right at the last second comes on and they're like, you're drunk, you know, they're your drunk uncle, and suddenly everyone's having so much fun. Mm-hmm. Isn't drunk uncle a SNL
Bobby
bit?
Moynihan, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, I'm going to steal that SNL bit and say, hey. Somebody
version.
Comes on, I'm going to change it to drunk aunt. Drawnt.
Drawnt.
And yeah, call it that. And everyone's loving this drawnt bit, right? And it's just...
We love drawnt.
Yeah. Bring back drawnt.
And it's
drawnt.
Crushing. And you start your song that was actually about,
Doctor
like,
aunt?
How you... Yeah.
She yeah. a doctor?
Yeah, people are loving...
Please. Dr. Aunt was my fault.
People are loving the puns, and it's going so well. And then you start your song, and it's back to what you were doing before. And meanwhile, everyone's chanting... You know, you can feel that the audience is like, oh, wait, we were having fun with yeah. Drawnt. And so then it's like, you know, there's another hypothetical road you go down. It's like, oh, we sing the Drawnt song. But probably, or maybe, there's a version where it's like, that gets a verse and a chorus.
And then yeah. you're out of there.
And then you're out of there because, like, yeah. that's cooked.
Another sand trap is, like, Drawnt comes in for the bridge. And that's delightful. The audience is so excited. But then the scene feels like, okay, well, that was bridge one, but we have to... address or respond to Drawnt,
yeah.
so that's bridge two,
yeah.
and then let's sing chorus one, and then maybe another walk-on happens because it's so exciting, and okay, well, we have to kind of reset, so I don't know how to, like, resolve that perfectly, but it's like, okay, a bridge can be such a fun moment to see that spotlight character, but then how do you keep landing the plane even as that's happening?
I think I took the bridge as, like, weirdo, it just to bring it back to the show we just did, I took the bridge in the wedding song, or like right the song right before the wedding song,
yeah,
and that was an example of, like, that's how much screen time that bit gets, because
mm-hmm.
mm. it's like, oh, that was funny a while back, do that for a sec and then move on.
You also did, and I really appreciated this, I think you did during the lore dump sequence where I was singing about shitty chips. Maybe after, like, chorus two, you or one of you three, like, basically indicated, and now we're done, and I've learned the thing we're supposed to learn, and now we're heading back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, oh, I had a
sounds like a Phillips
yeah.
thing.
And right. I was like, thank God. We did what we needed to do.
Right.
Let's go.
Because, yeah, I think it was because you had done a second verse of the chips, and I could kind of see, or I was feeling, we were all feeling, a little bit of, like, oh, this is juice.
Mm-hmm.
The juice
mm-hmm.
is squeezed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. To anyone listening, maybe it's like you might be worried that your scene partner will resent you for ending a song early because
there's
this idea that a song is, at least in musical improv, there's a common practice, a verse, a chorus, mm-hmm. a verse, a chorus, a bridge, and
a chorus.
But if the juice is squeezed and
it's
just end it. And mm-hmm. I personally, as an improviser, will be like, thank you, because don't make
yeah.
me sing another.
Yeah.
With musical too, it can sometimes mean that you're like, you get to feed two birds with one scone, like with your
is that a
like
saying?
Efficient.
I've never heard
that is
before.
The pitified version.
Like it's okay.
The pitified.
Oh.
Yeah,
he's
like
so
PETA has like PETA.
That's what Lois Griffin says.
PETA. Oh. So it's a Family Guy version.
You
Family
think
Guy
that
loves
seems
animals.
Weird? What about the time? Sorry, go ahead.
It's kill two birds with one stone,
yes.
but it without killing
feed
an
two
animal.
Birds with
yeah.
one scone.
That's so sweet. Now I'm picturing it.
Feed a fed horse is beat a dead horse, you know, like
oh,
instead of
yeah
but
in that case the the horse isn't getting, like, it's not suffering. It's already dead.
But it is some
waste of food.
Cruel, I
for
would
PETA.
Say. For PETA. It's a waste of PETA's food.
You're wasting food.
Okay. Oh, yes. So when you're an efficient and you had like a beautiful verse or something, I feel like I was watching and I was like, does he want to keep singing? Oh, maybe this is when we bring back Terry.
Yeah.
And then if Philip wants to keep singing, then we can do a ping pong. And then that's really fun because we don't have to do two scenes worth to accomplish both of these things. We can do one scene and it's really stimulating, but it is like a ping pong back and forth.
Yeah.
I think it's fun. It feels so scary to make a move like that because you're taught, I think, so much to not like take a song that's not yours, but it's ultimately so helpful, even though it's breaking the structure that's ingrained in our minds, to be like, this song can be more than one thing, especially at the end of like a narrative. So
it's also worth noting that like the thing we're aiming for is a musical. It's not a musical improv show. And so sometimes this form is just getting old enough now that like it can begin to settle. And I think that's the thing to fight in a way is like in a musical, think of the last song in a musical. There's going to be dialogue breaks and new characters and there's going to be a bunch of reprises and there's going to be like structurally in a musical or a movie or anything like there's going to be a lot of movement at the climax because you're bringing in elements. So, yeah, I just think the big this idea that once a song starts, I'm a big fan of a dialogue break in a song, especially if it's like not, if you start the song, you're a verse and chorus in and it's not working, like it's just not feeling funny, you can stop singing and like go back to looking for game, I think.
Yeah.
Why not?
Why not?
Yeah.
No rules. No rules.
No rules. No requirements.
Well, how are we on time?
Yeah,
are
what time
close?
Is it?
It's 5 to 1.
Oh, shit. Let's wrap it up with... briefly, something you're really loving or like something you're really proud of in your work as of late that's been like really fueling you and making your heart happy.
I've been really enjoying playing really, really big emotions and sort of like focusing it on it almost as an actor first rather than a writer. There was one moment in this show where like my, and it often turns into me playing sort of the high status villain who needs to get destroyed, which is a character I really love playing. Whereas like the main guy's evil dad, I sort of like, I wanted to like, I just want to be like a shitty dad in this kind of story for a bit. I don't really care about the comedy for a second. And I think I really have a lot of fun doing that. And I think, or I hope it helps ground the scene that's going on, not just in like comedy writing, logic, improv, whatever, but sort of in the reality, the verisimilitude, the feeling of it. Mm-hmm. I've been having a lot of fun doing that.
Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. I have been really enjoying after like a stint of dreading like group scenes, specifically like on a stage. I feel like it's so tempting to go in a semicircle and just pitch. And, lately I've been like, okay, group scenes where, and we did this for Mosh Pit, a show that we did last month, where it's like, we all know that the opening number for a montage show is going to be a group scene, but only two or three people step out. So it's forcing an actual scenic group scene where people's walk-ons are intentional and with a new perspective. And when that's kind of the arrangement, group scenes are so fun because it feels like so many spinning plates. That's so stimulating while all being like driven towards the same goal or same like ulterior game. And so sometimes when done wrong, that's just like too many cooks in the kitchen. But lately there have been some really fun ones where it's just like, wow, we're all just building and carrying this thing together. So that's been really fun.
Yeah. I've sung some pretty stupid songs lately that I've really enjoyed.
Hell yeah.
And that it's a good feeling to just give in to it and not like try to overcomplicate. Yeah. I got to sing a song in the last two Sing Out Louise shows ago. I sang a song with Adam Keller and John Drunell, literally just about water, and it was kind of similarly structured to like the one where we're like, we you were the bouncer and we were like setting you up to do.
Yeah.
It was like kind of like that. And I hadn't sung a song like that before. And I was like, oh, this is all that this needs to be. Mm-hmm. Just this song about water, because it's working. And it's like, it doesn't need to be an extra thing. So, yeah. And
as an audience member, that felt like an example of like, we're also watching the fact that it is being made, like the call and response is like, this is being improvised, and watching Madison just like answer all of John and Adam's questions or suggestions immediately. You saw the perfect amount of like, she's so smart, but she's also like not denying that she is thinking about it, her response right now. And it was so delightful. Just be like, oh, what's next?
That's really nice of you to say.
I try.
But yeah, I like dumb songs.
Me too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys so much for doing this little, I guess we can call it like a talk back almost.
Yeah. And if we have any questions, do we have any?
The Greg Hive is going to flood the chat with questions.
Yeah, let's get the Greg Hive. I know the cam's not on right now, but let's get the Greg Hive strong. Let's get really toxic in our comments. Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for doing this and for being on the podcast.
Thanks, Philip.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye-bye.